WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Virginia officials now say wear a face mask if you're out in public. Harrisonburg's Gus Bus, a popular children's literacy program, moves its reading service to YouTube. Mary Baldwin University says it will provide temporary housing for people who are homeless. And we talk with Stanton native, now head of the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Francis Collins. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, April 7th. As of this morning, nearly 2,900 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed in Virginia out of more than 24,000 people tested. 497 people have been hospitalized, and 54 have died. According to recent updates and modeling from the University of Washington, Virginia's peak in coronavirus cases could now be somewhere around April 20th. Governor Ralph Northam cautions that that modeling is not a perfect science.
There are various models. They change literally every day depending on the data that is put into them. And so we haven't made any adjustments by what we're seeing.
State officials are working with the University of Virginia to develop Virginia-specific projections. Officials say they expect to have that data later this week. And now officials, including VCU Health's infectious disease expert, say wearing face masks is essential to stop the spread of COVID-19. Charles Fishburne with our partner station VPM reports.
Dr. Richard Wenzel is chair emeritus and professor of the Department of Internal Medicine and veteran in dealing with the spread of infectious diseases. He explains even the most rudimentary masks can protect the wearer.
To protect yourself and others, the mask actually would do an effective job of stopping the larger droplets that are thought to be most important in transmission.
He says those larger droplets can spray beyond 6 feet, and even a modest mask can help stop it. They can stop infections from people who don't have symptoms, and they can help keep your hands off your face. VCU has advice on wearing and cleaning masks at vcuhealth.org/news-center. Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
11 hospitals in Virginia say they expect difficulty in obtaining personal protective equipment within the next 3 days. That is according to data released on Monday by the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association. Commonwealth is exploring new ways to acquire the gear. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports.
Virginia has received a small percentage of the masks, gloves, and gowns it's requested from the federal stockpile, so state officials are turning elsewhere. Governor Ralph Northam says they expect a shipment of personal protective equipment to arrive from Asia next week, part of a $27 million contract with a Virginia-based company. Secretary of Public Safety Brian Moran says it won't be a one-time thing. They're anticipating great need.
N95 masks that are in such great demand in our hospitals and nursing homes and first responder communities, as well as gloves and gowns and the other personal protective equipment that has been mentioned and is so vitally needed on the front lines.
The Department of Health recently gave hospitals 1 million masks they had left over from the H1N1 virus, and they've already sent hospitals the latest round of supplies from the federal stockpile. I'm Mallory Nopain.
Mary Baldwin University says it will provide temporary housing for people who are homeless. On Monday, MBU announced an agreement with the nonprofit shelter Valley Mission in Stanton to house around 30 people in Tullidge Residence Hall on campus. That is expected to allow the shelter to create more physical distance among its residents during the coronavirus pandemic. MBU says it will provide individual rooms with furnishings, access to shared kitchen and bathroom facilities, and trash disposal. The University of Virginia says it will provide $3 million to help contract workers and local residents out of work due to the economic distress from the pandemic. UVA President Jim Ryan announced Monday that the university is setting up a $2 million emergency assistance fund for contract employees and workers who have been furloughed. UVA will also provide $1 million to the Charlottesville Albemarle Community Foundation to support its efforts to help local residents. UVA and other higher ed institutions have closed their campuses to students for the semester in response to the pandemic. Phone calls to emergency hotlines for domestic violence have spiked in Virginia as people stay at home during the pandemic. The Virginian Pilot reported that calls to hotlines increased by 76% in March, according to the Virginia Sexual and Domestic Violence Action Alliance. The group compiles data on shelter services for 65 facilities. The alliance also said that about 1,000 people have sought overnight shelter from domestic violence. Virginia ABC is allowing more than 45 distilleries across the Commonwealth to ship spirits and low-alcohol coolers directly to consumers. Currently, FedEx and UPS are the only approved carriers for shipping. The temporary order will continue as long as Virginia ABC stores are considered essential businesses by the governor's office. Well, in the midst of all this, Governor Northam is considering hundreds of bills that the General Assembly sent him last month, including one that raises the minimum wage. Northam is being urged to get rid of one exemption for one category of worker. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Farm workers are not guaranteed the minimum wage. And even though the General Assembly passed a bill this year that raises the minimum wage, that does not apply to agricultural workers. Kim Bobo at the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy says the history of this exemption dates back to the racist days of Jim Crow, and that it's more important now for the governor to amend the bill and get rid of that exemption.
Right now, while the Homeland Security is defining farm workers as essential workers, we believe what more important time, if they're essential workers, then at the minimum, they should be covered by Virginia's minimum wage.
But Ben Rowe at the Virginia Farm Bureau says the exemption is important for helping farmers and farm workers who get paid by bushels harvested, vines planted, and acres cleared.
So this is a benefit to the farmer because it means that if someone comes out and just sits on a 5-gallon bucket all day, they're not being highly compensated for that time. On the flip side, for farm workers, this is a huge benefit because if they work harder and they harvest more, they're able to make more money.
The governor has until April 11th to make a decision about what kinds of amendments he might want to make to the bill. I'm Michael Pope.
Well, even though schools are closed for the rest of the academic year, teachers are trying to keep their students engaged through distance learning. As many districts are going online, the shift might be especially challenging for English learners, from Virginia Public Radio, Kat Modlin Jackson reports.
In order for online education to work, administrators, teachers, and families have to be on the same page. That's kind of tricky when there's a language barrier, says Rich Polio, director of ESOL services for Fairfax County Public Schools.
Our English learner families, many don't speak English at home, and so we've been reaching out to families in a number of ways to try and explain what's going to be happening with distance learning.
Fairfax County has the state's largest population of English learners, according to the Virginia Department of Education. In order to help these students and their families adapt to the changes, the school system is relying on an interpretation service and parent liaisons who can answer questions and share information. Making sure everyone has access to technology is another matter.
Many of our English learner families we know are families that come from families of poverty.
Polio says Fairfax County is still in the process of distributing laptops and hotspots to students who need them. I'm Kat Modlin Jackson.
The Gus Bus, a popular children's literacy program in Harrisonburg, has also adapted to the physical distancing guidelines while still engaging students and getting them excited to read. WMRE's Bridget Manley reports.
The team of literacy specialists who work with the Gus Bus aren't letting the COVID-19 pandemic keep them from reading to children in Harrisonburg. The team has started a YouTube channel to read to students, and they're using social media to get the word out. Jolyn Bartley is the Assistant Director of Children and Youth Services at the JMU Institute for Innovation in Health and Human Services, the home of the Gus Bus.
They are a super excited, motivated group of people who want to make sure that we are doing everything within our power to connect with the children and families that we regularly see with Gus Bus.
They have since branched out to add Spanish language videos, and they have sought feedback from students and parents about what else they can do to promote literacy at home.
Some of the feedback we've gotten so far is that people have seen the videos and they're really enjoying them, and that people are also interested in having more activities. So we're thinking about continuing to read stories and post those videos, but also posting some new videos that might have some ideas for activities that you can do at home.
Bartley says the team welcomes new ideas to engage with elementary school students and promote literacy while everyone stays at home for the duration. For WMRA News, I'm Bridget Manley.
And you can learn more about that story at WMRA.org and on the WMRA app. Finally today, Stanton native Dr. Francis Collins led an international effort to map the human genome, and now as director of the National Institutes of Health, he is building on that accomplishment to help develop a COVID-19 vaccine. Before the coronavirus outbreak spread in the U.S., he spoke with VPM's Charles Fishburn.
Dr. Collins, you recently participated in the Ken Burns documentary, The Gene, set to air on PBS. What is the scope of this program, and what exciting stories does it purport to tell?
Well, the films, which are remarkable in the Ken Burns way, are based upon a book by Sid Mukherjee called The Gene, which is quite the comprehensive historical review of what do we know about inheritance and the particles that convey that, namely genes. It goes all the way back to Mendel, and it goes forward through the Human Genome Project to present time in terms of precision medicine, and some projecting about where it's going in the future, including potential cures for many genetic diseases that currently don't have those. So it's a broad sweep in those 4 hours.
You mentioned the Human Genome Project that you headed. That was 17 years ago. What did it accomplish, and how has it changed the medical landscape in those 17 years?
The idea was to read out all 3 billion letters of the human DNA instruction book. It was my job to lead that effort, which meant serving as the project manager for about 2,400 scientists in 6 countries, trying to meet these deadlines, trying to invent technology as we went along. Happily, that all succeeded. In fact, it ended up ahead of schedule and under budget in 2003, and we had this. It has changed everything as far as our understanding about human biology and medicine. Nobody doing research in human biology can imagine now how you ever did it without having that information about the human DNA instruction book. In terms of medicine, it's really transformed our understanding of cancer, because cancer is a disease of DNA. Misspellings in DNA cause cancer, and now we can find them in each individual and optimize the treatment accordingly. It's teaching us a lot about hereditary influences on future risk of illness and differences in response to treatment. And it's uncovered the actual cause of some 6,500 diseases that we now know quite precisely what is the basis of those conditions, and therefore we're much closer to knowing what to do for them. So it has been transformative.
13 years and $2.7 billion to sequence a human genome. And now I understand it can be done in a single hour for less than $1,500. Are we talking about speed and efficacy here?
We are. You know, people say when you want things faster, better, cheaper, you've got to pick 2 out of 3. For DNA sequencing, we got a full house here. We can get all 3 of those.
One of those things where speed is so important is this coronavirus. And I understand that sequencing of the coronavirus in China enabled our scientists to begin work on a possible vaccine targeting that spike protein. Is that part of your work?
Absolutely. We at NIH are deeply into that, working in a collaboration with a company called Moderna to try to generate a vaccine against coronavirus in record time. And it was crucial to have sequencing capability, which we and China and many other countries now have, to get that information about the virus almost immediately. And that information is all it takes now to basically start a process to make a vaccine. Let's be clear, it's still a long process. We won't have a vaccine for coronavirus for about a year, but normally it would have been 5 or 6 years. So this is moving out.
Now, you're the director of the National Institutes of Health, overseeing 27 institutes and centers. And there were 3 potential breakthroughs that you thought were very exciting a couple of years ago. The Brain Initiative, the cancer immunotherapy, and using gene editing with the CRISPR-Cas technology. Are these things going to change medicine as we know it?
We are at a remarkable moment in terms of the ability to speed up our understanding of the causes of disease and how best to prevent and treat it. Many of those technologies have just been invented. Right now, we are pursuing this dramatically challenging effort to understand how the human brain works and to use that information to come up with better strategies for things like autism and schizophrenia and Alzheimer's disease. We're also in the phase of trying to understand what to do about cancer when it has spread beyond its original site and figuring out how to activate the immune system to find those cancer cells, which the immune system has somehow ignored. That's been revolutionary for many people, and we want it to extend even further to other types of cancer. Certainly, the idea of using gene editing with this so-called CRISPR-Cas system has produced some dramatic findings in just the last year or two. We've now had a few individuals with sickle cell disease who have been cured with this approach, and many other diseases waiting for their chance to be next.
That was Charles Fishburne speaking with Dr. Francis Collins, director of the National Institutes of Health. And you can watch the Ken Burns special, The Gene, on your local PBS station tonight and next Tuesday at 8 p.m. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safely connected and do enjoy your Tuesday.